This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello, everybody. This is a great podcast with a young Cane Corso that's doing big guardian dog type stuff. And so what do we do? How do we do it? Should we do it? Is it possible to do? So if you have a reactive dog, I kind of dive into the difference between a pet dog and a working dog and the controversy that goes with that, apparently, that I had recently found out. So it's pretty interesting, but great podcast for people who are dealing with very innate primal instinctual stuff. And it doesn't matter if you have a lab that wants to keep chasing birds or a gun dog that wants to keep chasing birds. It's like, where's the line in the sand of what you can do and what's realistic and what's fair? So hopefully you guys enjoy this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Number one dog training podcast in the world. Thank you guys. Enjoy. Bye. Talk to you next time. Bye.
Hey, so we have a 10 and a half month old Cane Corso.
Okay.
We got him as a puppy from a very responsible breeder at about 4 months of age. Grew up on a farm. We live in the city of Pittsburgh. We've been very dedicated about good training. You know, started him off with puppy kindergarten and all that good stuff. To be clear, a lot of things are going right.
Good.
He's a joy to be around. He's super affectionate. He's super smart, learns obedience very, very well. Essentially as soon as we got him, reactivity around other dogs was a huge thing. Mm-hmm. To the point that, like, with the puppy kindergarten, you know, we could not do any of the group interaction. It was like we walk into the room and like tunnel vision about the other dogs and all that stuff. So it was always on leash. And like once class started and all the dogs were like sat by your side, he could focus and he was almost like the class pet in terms of like how good he was with like obedience and all that stuff.
Okay.
You know, on walks, loose leash walking, lots of looking and checking in, lots of stuff. We've had crazy construction around us with street, and like he deals with the noises and the construction workers like hollering at him, like thinking he's so cute, very, very well. But the reactivity with other dogs, like other leash dogs, is very tough to control. So sometimes it's like a little tiny floofy dog that thinks he's, you know, big and tough and is eyeballing him and that just sets him off.
Mm-hmm.
Other times it's just another dog that starts it. Sometimes it's not another dog, but like a neutral dog is just minding its own business and it just sets him off. Sometimes we have good results with, you know, like a redirect and like touch, sit, spin and like shake it off and he's fine. And other times it's just, you know, the tunnel vision. We started off like the kindergarten that we worked with because it was part of the shelter required a harness.
Okay. Did you get him? I may have missed that, but did you get him at a shelter?
No. We got him from a breeder.
Okay.
4 months of age.
Okay.
She's very responsible. She's very well known. She takes bloodlines of temperament and all of that very, very seriously. We've been in touch with her, but she's...
The kindergarten is where we...
Oh, yeah. I was just saying the kindergarten was through a shelter.
Oh, okay.
So
got
because
it.
They're ethical, like their ethic standards, they only allow a harness in the kindergarten environment.
I got you.
And it was the breeder's opinion that the harness is almost like causing some of the reactivity that it was, we're kind of like holding him back and ramping him up, and she felt that we should change to a prong collar. It wasn't really our preference. I don't have experience with prong collars, but we did start using it, and for a time, it did control things, from like 6 to 8 months of age in particular. I want to be clear, we do not use the prong collar like in a harsh correction, every little thing that you didn't listen or do wrong. It's really to control him physically when he tries to lunge when he sees another dog. Because if I didn't have that, he's 145 pounds, I would just be, my face would be peeled off being dragged on the cement.
Sure.
It kind of that's where we are. But again, I just want to stress, like, a lot of things are great. His manners, in a calm walking environment are just almost pristine, particularly for a 10-month-old. It's a joy to walk him when nothing's going wrong. But, we have to be on alert all the time, head on a swivel around what's around us. And to some degree, I understand with this breed, like, that's just always how it's going to be. But, it's tough. And, we want to set him up for a happy life and an enriched life and not just stuck in our backyard. We do live in the city and there's a lot of stimulus around him. It's more of like a suburban part of the city, but it's just tough. And we are working with a trainer. We worked with her for a long time. She's a lovely person. She believes in she does positive reinforcement, but I just kind of feel like mastiffs and particularly corsos are not really her playbook. It's not a particularly common breed in this area, so she has limited experience with mastiffs anyway. I saw that you have a border collie, and I think that's really what maybe just want to reach out. We're kind of I'm kind of hungry for someone with mastiff experience,
Okay.
because I do feel like some of their training is different. Their attitudes are different, and how you work with them is different than like your average Labrador. So that's kind of the long and the short of it.
Yep. Gotcha. So understood. Right now, you are using positive reinforcement to try to stop the reactivity, correct?
To some degree. So when we first started with the prong, our trainer said, I know it's not going to look great, and I don't think you should do this for everything, but he may need a sharp correction when he starts lunging. You pull back, you snap at him briefly in a controlled way and say, knock it off. I'm in charge. You need to stop this. And we tried that for a couple of weeks and it seemed to work, but then it just returned.
Okay.
So what?
Did you stop using the equipment and then it returned, or did it just
No. We have never stopped using the prong collar.
Okay. Got it. So let's dive into the reactions. So explain to me right now the biggest reactions that you're getting.
The biggest reactions that we're getting is when we're walking down the street and there's a dog in close proximity. I'm talking like, if it's like 20 feet away, he's interested, but he's not going crazy. And we can send videos if you want, but like 10, 15 feet away, particularly if the dog is eyeballing him or is reacting first, he is going to react. So that reaction looks like barking and lunging towards that dog, and we have to physically hold him back.
Okay.
Very rarely is it a person. If he feels surprised by the person coming towards us, or that person is like eyeballing us, he'll have a similar reaction. But the average person, we just walked up the street. There was a huge construction crew 5 feet from him, and he was just looking at me and looking forward and looking at me and looking forward, model behavior.
Okay, and he when you're saying that, do you feel like he wasn't reactive towards the construction worker? Is that what you're saying? He's
No,
engaged. He's
yeah,
engaged
I'm
with
saying
you?
he was perfect. But yeah, I'm
Okay.
saying he was not reactive.
Good.
There was no lunging, no barking. He was just calm, relaxed body, moving along.
Okay, that's good. Okay, so when you're using your prong collar, how are you applying it? Like, what is your once you start going out, and let's say he did cue up on somebody, or he started to react towards something or look like he's about to react, what do you do?
I do not put pressure on the prong until he does something to warrant the pressure.
Okay.
We tell him to leave it and relax and look at me. If he lunges, I have a traffic handle at the base of the leash that I'm holding on to so he can't get far and, you know, dislocate my shoulder. Mm-hmm. And if he lunges, he essentially is correcting himself. He's getting a pop because he's pulling away and trying to lunge. And then if it keeps happening, then I have to yank him back to some degree so he's not jumping into traffic or anything like that.
Right.
And then we try to redirect and, you know, let's circle, let's step away, touch my hand, look at this treat kind of thing to kind of settle him down. And more often than not, that works, but it's not a pleasant process. It's physically exhausting and it's tough.
Okay. Yeah, I totally get you. I mean, I have similar issues with obviously my clients' dogs, but my own dogs. And a lot of it is just, it's frustration. So I would agree that putting a harness on a dog that is frustrated or reactive, but it's stemming from frustration likely. And it sounds like he's a sweet dog. You feel like he's just getting frustrated and reactive on the leash. And then when he gets to the person or gets to the dog, do you feel like he would just...
It has never come to that. We've never allowed him to get to that dog because when he's barking like that, I mean, like, he could do serious harm to that dog or that person. And we're just of the mindset that, like, he doesn't need to meet people unless we want those people to meet him.
Right.
And those meetings happen at home after he's settled in his crate and calm and can do a polite greeting, which he does. He meets strangers, you know, that we want him to meet.
And he's fine.
With, you know, friends of ours and things like that. But we're explicit with them. Like, when you come over, you don't touch his face and cuddle him right out the gates. You have to earn that and show that you're part of the pack and that you're calm. And when they follow that procedure, he's perfectly fine with them.
Good. Yep. So in my opinion, it's just classic Cane Corso guardian type breed. They are, you know, and I talked about this the other day on my Instagram. I say that they're not good pets. And what I mean by that is and I say that about my Borble and Cane Corsos are similar. And I think a lot of people don't understand the difference between like a working dog and a pet. And a pet is really just living for other people to give attention to. They're living for affection and hang out on the couch all day. And they just don't care. You don't have to, they basically can just be inserted into your life. Basically, the only thing you have to do is potty train. Everything else is optional. But with a Cane Corso or a Borble or any type of working dog, if you will, it doesn't matter if it's a Border Collie, a Mastiff, a Malinois, they are not good pets because they're a lot more managed, right? So you can't just say, yeah, come into the house. You can't just say, yeah, go pet my dog. That's what I mean by, you know, the difference
100%.
Between a pet and a working dog. And so they're not good pets, meaning we don't want to just get a dog and, you know, the whole neighborhood can come over and everything's fine. It's like, no, they're on guard. They're suspicious innately. They're protective, etc. So I think that the prong collar is good. I like that, especially for such a large dog. So there's a couple things as you move forward with the reactivity on the leash. There's the first thing that comes to mind is my dismantlement program that I talk about a lot in my reactivity course. And so the dismantlement is essentially there's a fork in the road that these types of dogs will go down with you as a handler and as an owner. And so there's this, and again, there's this innate, hey, there's a dog, there's a person, I'm suspicious. You're not going to be able to likely get that out of the dog and just say, hey, don't be a Corso, right? Whatever. So for me personally, I have a couple different ways that I manage this with my personal dog and with my clients' dogs. And if it's coming from a place of suspicion, there's one side of desensitizing the dog potentially, which in my opinion is less likely to happen. Meaning, for an example, go out to a busier place, have your dog be passed by 100 people within a half an hour, pay your dog with their lunch, their breakfast, their dinner, make it a good experience, and then leave. You do that enough, the dog sees enough people, experiences enough experiences to be like, you know what? I'm not as suspicious anymore. Dogs, dogs like him, what's his name?
Luca.
Dogs like Luca likely aren't going to just go, oh, you know what? I'm going to let my guard down. It's possible. It's just not likely. But I always like to mention that it's still good to do in conjunction just so your dog can see that many pictures. For an example, mm-hmm. if you go out for a walk and you see 1 to 3 people, there's a higher chance that the dog is going to be suspicious or reactive because they're seeing less people. They're seeing less pictures. They're doing the exercise less. If you go out mm-hmm. again to a downtown area and you kind of just pull off to the side where you can safely handle your dog without any type of reactions or people coming up to pet him, and your dog sees that picture over and over and over again, and you pay the dog, it is possible for the dog not to make a big deal. Here's the caveat, though, is even if you did that, like if I brought my Mastiff out there and do that, he would probably do that. But the problem with these types of guardian dogs is everything changes environmentally. So when you get into your home or your neighborhood, it's not the same thing to them. They actually could care less. And I've already done that experiment with my dog. If I bring him to my facility and he's around a bunch of other dogs and a bunch of people, he really doesn't care. Because he just, when he walks around, is Luca intact or is he fixed?
He is intact. Yep. The breeder contract required it to be until at least 2 years old.
Yep. And it's a great idea. So, but my point is with that is you have a lot more territorial things going on, right? When dogs are kept intact, they have that testosterone, they're these teenagers kind of running around and it's very predatorial. It's very competitive, you know, in his head, I'm air quoting, it's competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I understand.
So when he's walking around and he's peeing on every stop sign and peeing on every bush, when you're in your own environment and your own neighborhood, and this is something I've dealt with Burley, is when they see another dog in an area that they have basically marked for, in my case, 2 years, in your case, almost a year, it's different. So even if you did go outside of your environment, so I just want to mm-hmm. kind of argue with myself there of making a point of you could desensitize, but the reality is with a guardian type breed, it's not really applicable. They don't really care. And it'd be very similar to like a fearful dog. The desensitization process would be much better because they're actually just afraid of other people. And Luca's probably just being more protective because he's in his territory with his owner.
Yeah.
So just throwing that out there. But worth a shot. Just go out, desensitize, pay the dog, have a lot of fun. But anyway, so, and then there's the deactivation process or the dismantlement process of reactivity. And the idea is basically having a bunch of different exercises that you're going to do once you see him start to build. And unfortunately, a lot of times with dogs like this, it's predicated off of the other person. And again, my dog is very, very similar to your point why you called me or I called you is same thing. If I'm walking and he sees a person, whatever. But then if he sees a person with a hood up and earmuffs on and whatever, he's like, yep, I need to go check mm-hmm. this person's ID. And so you can't really control, unfortunately. Same thing with, again, an intact male. He may see a fixed neutered dog that was neutered at 8 weeks old and they never had testosterone running through him and he completely ignores them. Then he runs across to an 8-month-old intact golden retriever and it's game on. It's completely different reactivity. It's a completely different game for the dog. And that's, again, it's something that you can't control. So for me and in these bigger dogs, what I have come to the conclusion with is, especially with these guardian breeds, is do your dismantlement. So if you see him perk up, you have to have exercises in order for you to be successful, which means we have to have a good leave it. We have to have a good heel. We need some inside turns, even a down or a sit stay, depending on how extreme it is. Like there's 0 to 100 or 0 to 10 to make it easy. So if you're out for a walk with him and you tell him leave it or basically, hey, quit the crap, have you worked on something like that before? And how realistic is it for him to listen?
I would say all of those skills he has just about as good as you could have a 10-month-old.
Okay.
So there's a delectable barf, doggy kibble barf, 10 feet down the road from us that he was desperate for. And I told him leave it and he walked away from it.
Okay.
He will sit on commands almost all the time, even on walks, mid-walk. He will heel mid-walk. He rarely lunges unless it's that tunnel vision. I see a dog, like it is loose leash 98% of a 25-minute walk, like a joy to walk. You know, we don't make him do four on the floor down on a walk too often. Mm-hmm. He'll do it sometimes, like as to give himself a break. You know, if there's a nice patch of grass and he sees a stick he wants to chew on to decompress, and we'll encourage it. But all of those like basic obedience commands that you just listed, like,
and some more advanced ones,
and some more advanced ones, like he is excellent at.
Okay.
So it's this like tunnel vision of like, this is a threat. And I'm not a behaviorist, so I don't know, but there are times where I see like, oh, maybe this is like what the adult Luke is going to be, where he just sits and observes. Neutral, but he's like, there's people I can see from 30 feet away up at the bottom of the street. I'm just looking, making sure everything's cool. No one's doing anything.
But then he'll look from them at us.
And then he'll look at us and check in. And that's fine. I'm not going to try to, that's a good behavior in my book.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you know, there's a woman who's not paying attention and she's on her cell phone and on speakerphone and she's eyeballing the dog from 10 feet away. She's not thinking about it. She just sees a cute dog. And he's like, what the fuck are you looking? Excuse my language. But he's just like, what are you looking at? And he like, yeah, gets angry. And, you know, like this dog, like I've had dogs my whole life, but the easy dogs, you know, if you can call them that. This dog has woken me up to just how dumb people are about approaching a dog, looking at a dog, that our neighbors with their doodles across the street that are barking and yapping at him, and they just stand there and like, or walk towards us and make it worse. And like, of course, all these things make me angry, but it's not their job to accommodate me and my dog.
Yeah.
But we need to do more than just survive and have a hurting shoulder from holding him back for the rest of our lives, you know? So like, I know there's more work that can be done. I don't think he's a lost cause or anything like that, but the basic tactics of basic obedience don't feel like it doesn't feel like enough. And it doesn't feel like it's his breed specific to get him to become a confident, calm adult. I don't expect him to go to the dog park. I don't want him to go to the dog park. I think dog parks are awful, but you know, we need to be able to like walk around our neighborhood or walk around a new neighborhood where he's calm. He may not like what he's seeing, but he's not trying to lurch off the leash into the street and drag me with him in the process.
Yep. Yep. So yeah, I got everything that you're talking about, and I definitely can relate and understand what you're talking about for sure, especially with my dog. So some of this is going to, so a couple things that came to mind when you were talking about that is there's just like these nerves too that dogs have. There's certain, and it's genetic disposition,
yeah,
and stuff.
It's genetic. Yeah, we can't fight genetics.
Right, right. But you could, it'd just be, you know, very frustrating and you'd be kind of chasing that tail your whole life. So for me, and I'll just be honest with you, what I've done with Burley, my Mastiff, again, very similar dog, where he's same. I mean, honestly, man, when you're talking about this, it's just like my dog to a T. It's the same thing. Like he's never been aggressive towards any dog or any person, but man, if he's held back and he can't do what he thinks he needs to do, then it's he becomes extremely reactive, and it just comes from a place of frustration. But for him, it comes from a place of, if I can't do this, then we're all dead. Like it's genuinely,
yeah,
life or death for him. That's just these types of dogs. So there's a couple things that I've been doing. One of the things is when I'm out with him is, again, so we have to go through the possibilities of making sure we're correcting on time. And there is a good chance that correcting the dog is going to be ineffective in these cases, because you're basically 90% of dogs who are reactive out of fear and lack of leash skills. There's the small percentage of dogs, 5 to 10%, like Luca and like my dog Burley, where it's just guardian breeds. We basically, these dogs are meant to be in our yards, in our houses. Basically, if somebody comes in or somebody comes on the property, they handle that person. And when I mean handle, they go up there, they're present, they're there. Some dogs are more nervy than not. My dog Burley tends to be a little bit more nervy, which means he's ultra suspicious. You know, he's hackles are up, and he just, so there's other dogs that will just be there and be present, and that's enough. So for me, I guess my point is sometimes it's easier to work on constructive avoidance. And so what I do, if let's say I'm out for a walk with Burley and I see another dog, and most importantly, if I see somebody not paying attention with their dog, or if I see a younger kid's walking the dog, I'll turn around and go the other way. If I 100%. See, if I see somebody that I know that my dog is going to be suspicious, I have a couple options. I can either work through that with him and fight the beast, if you will. It doesn't have a lot. Here's the thing: it doesn't have a lot to do with obedience training. And it's interesting, and it's really profound to me, to be honest. I've been studying leash reactivity for over a decade, and getting into these guardian breeds and living with them and understanding them, I have such a different experience and I guess more of a respect of what's actually happening. Where, you know, a lot of times I would tell my clients, well, your dog is reactive because your obedience isn't good, or you don't have the skill sets. And that's, again, 90% of the time that is the case. But when you get these guardian breeds, you just can't reach them. Like, you physically and mentally cannot reach them when they go into this state of mind. It doesn't matter if you have the e-collar and you have the prong collar and you have the food and you're doing all the things. When you get into a situation where they genuinely feel like they are threatened, or they genuinely feel like this person that's approaching, that's on their, you know, in their headphones, not paying attention or whatever, is a threat to you or anybody else that your dog loves, you can't reach them. Like, the training just doesn't reach them, if that makes any sense. So a lot of times what I've been doing with Burley is I just turn and burn. It's okay. So I've been kind of, you know, saying this online, like, it's okay to go the other way. And but to be honest, 5 years ago, if I heard somebody say that, I'd be cringing, because I'd be like, that's bullshit. But now, owning this particular dog, which again, this dog is like the 5%. Luca is the 5%, where they have this really big protective energy. So, but the other things, so I just wanted to point that out, that that's what I've been doing with Burley, is there's a lot of times where I just turn and burn, because it just doesn't, there, I have nothing to win to try to move forward and try to reach my dog in this state of mind where I'm basically fighting his genetics. That to me just doesn't make sense. And it's, to me, it's not worth it either. I'm out for my morning walk. I have nothing to prove. My other dog is commanded in 3 different languages, and she's off leash and she listens to everything I say. And then I have, and I have this mastiff, which frankly, again, I made that video on Instagram the other day where a lot of people that I talk to who own Borbles, they're like, I've never even put a leash on my Borble. They're just literally in my yard. They're in my house. And I travel and I leave, and I leave the kids, or I leave my partner, or I leave the dog out while I'm sleeping, whatever. And they don't have to worry about anything. They don't put the dog on a leash. They don't do training because of the things that you and I are talking about with Luca and like my dog Burley, is they're trying to tame the bear. Now, that doesn't mean you can't walk your dog, and it doesn't mean you can't enjoy your dog. But there are some realities that I have recently faced as a dog trainer to be like, whoa, this is – I've done, you know, everything. I mean, I did everything right. I've been training the dog every day since I got him home at 8 weeks, and he's unreachable in this state of mind because I'm really trying to stop him from doing what he's born to do. Which, could I do it? Yes. And have I done it several times? Yes. But is it fun? No. Is it scary to the other person? 100%. So let's back up into what you can do. So that's kind of just, I just wanted to let you know that there is, you know, that option of like, hey, listen, I'm just going to turn and burn. There's nothing wrong with that. But I do think you can go out, and because you've already said, like, he does go out sometimes. He sees the construction workers. He looks back at you and says, hey, and then you pay him or whatever. That's a good decision. Burley will do that too. Again, it's like the 1 out of 8 people where he's like, ah, I don't like their sunglasses. And you're like, really? And I get it. You know, it doesn't make sense to you or I. Like, why all of a sudden? It just, whatever. So the dismantlement, so it sounds like you have pretty good obedience. The only thing I would say on top of this is your timing. So a lot of people who have a good inside turn, a good heel, a good 4 on the floor down, good thresholds, good obedience, etc., sometimes their timing is off. So do you feel like, let's say you're out walking, he's in a heel, And then all of a sudden he perks up, his chest goes forward, his ears go forward, he sees a dog, and you're like, okay, he's about to build. Do you feel like he's getting to the point where he's already reactive or pulling where you're trying to correct him, or are you proactive in correcting him before he gets to that point?
I have not been correcting him with the prong until he lunges.
Okay.
So if there's an opportunity to somehow cool him off or correct him with the prong, I'm certainly open to it. I've just tried to, it's a combination, right? Like, let's get some distance, let's duck into an alley or a driveway, redirect, like, you know, like touch, do a little spin, look at this high value treat. I do try not to just make him sit and be perfectly still and stare at the treat versus this German Shepherd across the street. Because I feel like the German Shepherd's going to win out, or the German Shepherd's going to bark first and then he's going to lose it. But I just try to give him like some good alternatives to do the right thing. And then the only time I correct is if he tries to lunge, you know, he kind of pops himself back because I've got the traffic handle. So it's close and he's not like lurching my whole body, or anything like that. And sometimes that you get that perfect pop, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
And he mostly settles down. Occasionally, if it's bad and I have to really give him a pullback because he's hurting me or he's in danger to himself, you know, I don't like to say this because I don't do this purposely, but like I've pulled him back and he's like almost toppled over because he just had so much explosive energy that he just redirected it on himself. And that kind of like, whoa, what just happened? He's not like upset with me or like, you know, whining, like, you know, crying or anything, but like it kind of popped him out of it for a second.
Sure.
So I'm open to different techniques to stop the build, but we just haven't tried that.
Yep. Yeah. So that's good that you haven't tried that yet. So the timing is important. So let's say you're out with him and he starts to build. And what you want to do is you want to catch him before he gets to the reactive state. So so let's say, okay, he's in a heel, Luca heel. He perks up. You say, leave it. The other thing you can do is start working on a focus command, which essentially asks the dog to look at you and engage with you on command, which is pretty helpful. And then that way you can give him some pressure for doing that. So let's say you're out for a walk, he perks up, he starts to build, right?
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
You say, leave it, and as soon as the dog doesn't disengage, because you already know that he knows what leave it is because you've used it before, then you would correct the dog. So you would correct the dog, and you would basically try to de-escalate the build before it ever gets to the point of reaction. But if you're trying to put out a fire when it's already roaring, it's obviously much, much harder. So that's kind of the goal. Is you're out, he perks up, you say, hey, quit the shit, enough, don't think about it, stop. And he goes, nope. And he doesn't disengage. He doesn't stop. He doesn't listen. Then you would correct. So that's what I was going to say, is if you are waiting for him to go full on and react, then that's going to be a huge issue. And that could be one of the main reasons why you can't really reach him and you can't get a hold of him, because he's already exploding and you're trying to stop the explosion.
Yeah.
So that would be my recommendation. You're out for a walk. He's in a heel. He starts to build. Luca, leave it. He goes, screw you. Correction. So before mm-hmm. he gets to that point, you can do that. Don't try to put the fire out when it's already blazing, which is impossible with a dog like that. This, yeah. As you know, they're strong. They get low to the ground and then they just go and you're like, oh shit. So.
And sometimes there definitely is that opportunity where, you know, time has no meaning in these situations, and it could be 10 seconds. It could be a half a second. Sometimes that build is noticeable and there are those opportunities. Mm-hmm. Other times it is 0 to 100 in a second, like truly a second. Yep. There's like no time to prepare or set him up or anything. And it's just sort of like, we need an evacuation plan. Mm-hmm. So is there anything to do in those, we need an evacuation plan moments?
Yeah, it's a great question. And that kind of leans into what I was talking about before, is you kind of have this fork in the road where, are we dealing with a dog that is starting to build, but not has not yet gone overboard and has not basically the fire is ablaze. Can we correct him? Can we readjust? Can we reengage? Can we give him an opportunity to make a better decision without any type of pressure? Or in some cases, can we help him make a better decision by correcting him and snapping him out of it? Yes. Okay. And if not, where he just goes 0 to 100, which my dog has, many dogs that I've had on the leash do, then at that point you're managing. So you go, okay. So you're trying to be proactive, right? By saying, hey, don't do it. Bad decision. Okay. So it would be the difference between talking your friend out of fighting somebody versus breaking up the fight. So there's mm-hmm. you're either proactive or you're reactive. So once he does lunge and zoop, there he's gone, then you're pulling up on the collar. You're trying to extinguish him from lunging forward. You're trying to take away basically his base and his power. So as he's starting to build, he's going to be long. He's going to be strong. He's going to be low. You're trying to basically break that down. You're pulling straight up. Taken away, you're trying to lift him basically up so he can't continue. And at that point, you're just managing and you're being reactive to what he's doing. And yeah. Again, like those are things, like those are very sometimes instinctual things. And for the most time, again, it's those guardian predatorial dogs where all of a sudden, boom, they're gone. The only other time I've seen it outside of that has just been really aggressive dogs who want to kill things, like these, a lot of predatorial based dogs, right? Dogs who just lunge because they just want to kill. But the other mm-hmm. side is just guardian dogs, and to your dog and Luca and my dog, they just, again, they want to go, they get to that person and they just sniff around, and the person just stands there terrified, and then they're off. Okay, see you later, nice to meet you, and they're gone for the most part. Mm-hmm. Other dogs is a little bit different, because of course it's predicated off of what the other dog does. So that's what you would do. I mean, you're out for a walk. Your dog just goes 0 to 100. You got a giant dog at the end of the leash. You're going up. You're basically stopping the dog from pulling. You're making a safe assessment here by saying, hey, I'm stopping you from danger. I'm stopping you from scaring somebody or potentially getting into a fight with another dog. And then after the fact, you just have to kind of like really relive what happened and make sure that you learn from it. Because for Burley, it's pretty, you can see it coming. It's pretty easy to read, but mm-hmm. sometimes it's, you know, sometimes I'd be picking up poop and all of a sudden he's like, boom. And, yeah. So again, I think it's a very instinctual thing for these big guardian dogs to all of a sudden feel like they need to take this opportunity to address the situation. Like, it's not anything that you have done wrong. It is not a lack there of training. It's just, we have a very protective guardian dog, and now we are walking that. And if you follow me on any social media, I talk about this a lot with my dog. It's like, you know, I piss a lot of people off by saying they're not good pets, but I just don't want anybody to get a dog thinking that they're big and bad. And it's like, yeah, it's a lot of dog. Like, you basically are hiring that bodybuilder secret service guy to go around your neighborhood, and they don't fit in. It just, you know, it's tough for them. But there is a spectrum of breeds too, to be fair. Like, same thing with Cane Corsos. You can get the couch potato Cane Corso. You can mm-hmm. get the working line super protective Cane Corso. And there's that spectrum. Same thing with Borbles, I've come to find out. So, but you got that, right? You got that very suspicious dog. So here's your homework. Here's your roadmap here. Here's what I would do. I would make sure your timing is really on time. So you're out with him. He's on a walk. He starts to build. You say, hey, quit the shit. If he doesn't, immediately you're enforcing it. Bang. Mm-hmm. Correction. That's really important. If he stops engaging, then you would say good. But the other thing is because of his power and his strength, if he's on your left side, excuse me, and he kind of lunges in front of your legs, then you're into hold on mode. Then you're playing tug of war. Mm-hmm. So you almost have to make sure that you're one step or two steps ahead of him if he does try to lunge in behind you or in front of you. And mm-hmm. so a lot of times I'll be pretty short on the leash, and if he does short without anticipatory pressure on the yeah. dog. But and then that way, if he does lunge, I'm going straight up, because you can't outpower yep. the dog once he's in full like pull mode. Nope. You have to go up. You have to take away their base, and dogs don't care. Like it looks bad, but of course it's like he doesn't care. He's going to fight you on that. Once he calms down, then it's kind of all over. But I mean, it sucks to see. Like you said, it's kind of embarrassing. You're out and this person's just walking, and all of a sudden your dog's now you're like choking your dog out. And you're like, oh hey, good morning. It's like. Man, it's part of some of these guardian dogs, especially when you get into that genetic side or that spectrum of real protective dogs, you know. And I always tell the story, same thing for you. I'm sure. I mean, I would imagine you got a Cane Corso for some sort of protection or some sort of guardianship. They are big, beautiful dogs, but most people don't get them to do. You know, herding, we get them because they're big protective dogs, and it gives yeah. us peace of mind. I mean, that's exactly why I got my dog. I have a young family and I travel a lot. And when I'm not home, I feel much more comfortable. So my point is, you know, when you are handling him and you're working with him, you have to also pick your battles. And that's what's been really hard for me, to be transparent with my dog. Is, you know, and with Burley, for an example, like I said, I've done all the good training. So I can attest to he can be running around off leash, chasing his sister, his dog sister, having the mm-hmm. time of his life off leash. And I can just down him, boop, and he'll just poof, down immediately. I can recall mm-hmm. him off of everything. But once he goes into the reason why I was put on this earth and I was born is to go into protective mode. And if we as humans try to interject with that, it is very difficult, like I said, to reach him. And there's not much any training that can do to prepare you for something like that.
Yeah.
So your timing has to be really on time. I mean, the other thing that I would say is the remote collar could also be a huge training tool for you to be able to reach him. I have used that with my dog several times. Mainly because of his power and his strength, because I don't want to fight him. So with the prong collar, yeah. for an example, if you look at, you know, the essence of dog training, it's do more of this and do less of this. And so if he's out and you got a prong collar on him and he's all of a sudden goes 0 to 100, bang, like that, and you go, oh shit, you know, and you're trying to hang on to him. And now you're basically in putting the fire out. You're not working on training. You're not working on rewarding him. You're working on, all right, I got to reel in the beast to keep everybody safe and try to make this as least stressful for everybody involved and kind of walk away. And so with the e-collar, because it has a spectrum 0 to 130, and I would highly suggest just checking out my videos on the remote collar if you haven't already. It's really informative. The remote collar is a great training tool. But let's say you can't physically handle him, and I know I have a really hard time with my dog. And if you get into a situation where you can basically turn the intensity up by pushing a button instead of physically fighting the dog when timing matters, that's also just really, really helpful as well to deactivate some of this build. So that's just mm-hmm. a kind of a side note too. You know, again, I work with a lot of people. I have a lot of young women get these big Cane Corsos and these Mastiffs, which is fine. It's just sometimes it's like, look, your dog outweighs you by 50 pounds. And when they're going to go, you, to your point, if you know, a young woman had a dog like Luca, it'd be very difficult. It'd be a different conversation, right? It would just be, you have to use different pieces of equipment to help you with your dog right now, you know? And I use it with Burley all the time. So instead of trying to fight him in certain circumstances, because of what he's trying to do, the remote collar comes in really handy too, to deactivate his build without getting physical with him.
Yeah. Now, I'm not opposed to any tool as long as it's used appropriately and responsibly. We're at a point maybe like a month ago, we were starting to think maybe he does need this. And we did consult with our breeder. She's very reachable, but she's also not on retainer to train us, and she doesn't live nearby.
Sure.
And she said, you know, I use e-collars and all that stuff, but she kind of advised that that would only actually exacerbate his aggression, like the in that moment, it's like making him build up aggression more.
Oh, I see this thing, and then that thing is hurting me.
Yeah, like he would associate the zap with the dog, sure. And it would only make him more reactive.
Sure. But, yeah, and it's a great conversation, and I have it often. So here's how I explain it to people. So let's say we have, and there's tons of studies behind this too, especially with young adults and children. It's pretty interesting, where the dog knows the difference between right and wrong. Okay, so we say Luca heel, Luca leave it, Luca down, Luca stay, Luca sit, etc. We've worked on that. We've drove it in. The dog knows it. Once the dog decides to go F you, I'm going to go terrorize this young family walking their golden on the other side of the road or whatever. Insert innocent bystander, it is. At that point in time, the dog broke the behavior and knows they're doing something wrong, and then is actively putting themselves and other people in danger. Mm-hmm. So the remote, any type of correction, e-collar, harness, prong collar, plastic pinch, etc., gentle leader, you go on forever. Any type of correction is to help the dog understand clearly that that's inappropriate behavior and we don't want them to do it again. So to your point, we do. So that's why I always tell people, no, that is the point of it. When the dog goes, we don't want the dog to think the equipment did it. We want to be really good dog trainers and condition the dog that when they break the behavior is when the punitive and aversive measures come about. So it's not that, I don't like the e-collar, I don't like the prong collar. If we're good at dog training and conditioning these things, it's the exact opposite. It's actually, I don't want to break the heel, sit down, or leave it because I don't want to get punished. It's not, the e-collar's on, now I'm getting punished, right? And so low-hanging fruit for people who don't believe in telling their dogs no and holding them accountable and correcting them, you can just say if you put an e-collar and a prong collar on a dog, they're just going to basically hate whatever's handling it, whatever's at the other end, whatever it's on, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is we're only applying these basic tool sets to pre-known and pre-existing behaviors. It just gives us an ability to do it safely and humanely to the dog instead of choking themselves out or dealing with the dog actually hurting somebody or something. So on paper, I agree 100%. You would imagine that piece of equipment is going to make the dog even pissed off. But the reality is if we're doing it correctly, then the dog is actually getting punished, and it's a punitive measure for breaking the obedience that we had done, right? So the dog is making the decision whether that thing comes on or off. It has nothing to do with you, period.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I've been doing a lot of research on this study too, and I've been reading this book by Dr. Amen, which talks about this a lot with, he's a psychologist, and he wrote a book. It's the same thing with kids. We say, hey, it's time to go to bed. If you get out of your crib, unfortunately, no book, but it's completely up to you. So it's not that the kid's going to turn around and go, well, going to bed means I don't get a book. Absolutely not. It's if you get out of your bed and you make that decision, then you get no book. So the punishment and the punitive and the aversive thing that the kid or the dog doesn't like is caused by what they do and their actions. It has nothing to do with the bed, the collar, or that. It's just there to enforce things. You know what I mean? It's like, I hate cops. It's like, well, did you break the law? Or, you know, it's like, it's pretty black and white, right? You go 70 and 30, it's not the cop's fault, you got a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying? So, but to be fair, to be objective, you can absolutely 1000% make that assumption if you introduce both of those pieces of equipment improperly. For an example, we put a cheap remote collar on a dog. They've never felt it. They've never seen it. We do no conditioning and they just do something and we nail them. They're going to become what we call collar aware. So then they're going to turn around and go, that thing sucks. Don't put it on me. That can absolutely 100% happen if you do it the wrong way. But if you do it the proper way, the remote collar conditioning, The dog likes it. When they see it, they get excited. That means they're going to go train. That means they're going to go off leash. And then at some point, you can use the corrective levels to help you out by pushing a button instead of fighting this dog and sweating and, you know, all that stuff. So it's a process for sure. It's not a it's not a cheat code where you just stick it on the dog, and if they don't listen, you zap them. It's much, much more than that. But it's a great, 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 great question.
Do you have like training series?
Yep, I have
on these things.
Absolutely, I have a course on it, and then I have multiple YouTube videos on how to introduce it. I also have videos on. I use them all the time, but I have videos on how to use it as a punitive measure. But my e-collar course, for an example, is it breaks down fundamentally every single thing you need to do and introduce it on your own. But the remote collar essentially is a conditioning tool that the dog learns how to pick up the phone, and you're on the other end. It's not in the beginning stages when you're introducing it. It is not punitive. It is not corrective. It should cause no stress. It's paired with pre-known behaviors, and the dog just barely feels the stimulation. It's just like the chiropractic TENS unit. It's the same technology.
Yeah, I know they even have like the vibrate setting and all that stuff.
So. And the vibrate, the vibrate is far more aversive than the actual conditioning levels of the stimulation, like by a lot. So let's say we put it on I have my own e-collar, and it has 127 levels. People ask, why does it have 100? I'm like, why does your car have 120? I don't know. I don't know. Just in case, I guess you get into a high speed pursuit. But the e-collar stimulation that we introduce the dog to is barely noticeable. The dog barely feels it. And then you condition a behavior with it. It's called negative reinforcement. So negative means we're taking something away. So we ask a dog to sit. We hold the remote collar at a level that they can feel, but it's not punitive or stressful. They go, I wonder what this is. They put their butt on the ground, and then the handler pays the dog. Yes, good sit. And they go, oh, me doing this behavior paired with this feeling or sensation equals this, and it's payment. And so we really condition the dog that the e-collar is fun and they get to go do stuff and it's just an extension of you. But once it's introduced, then you have the ability. So instead of like, let's say you have corrective levels to your point where you said you corrected your dog and he like went flying backwards or whatever. Instead of getting physical with the dog, you can, again, it's completely up to you. You can either not get a correction or you can get a correction, but it's up to you. It's your decision. You put it into your dog's hands, right? So you say, sit. He goes, nope, there's a dog. He flies off. And so you can just hit a button and automatically go to a punitive measure. You don't raise your voice. You don't flex your muscles. You do nothing. The dog just goes back into a sit. So absolutely check that out on YouTube. Just look at my YouTube channel and in the search bar, just type in e-collar or remote collar, and there's tons of free introductions. And then my course as well.
Okay.
So anyway, so I think you're just, I think you already know you're kind of battling this genetic thing. It's not impossible, but I think you have to work on your timing. And the inside turn is also really helpful. So let's say he's on your left, Luca heel, you're out for a heel. He starts to build up. You take your left leg and you cut him off and you go the other way. Now you're not going home. You're just going the other way to take him off the heat, if you will. And then you're going right back and you're working on some engagement. The other thing too that I think being a leash reactivity expert and knowing this breed, a lot of people don't have good engagement when they're out in general. Sounds like you guys have pretty good engagement with the dog. However, you want to make sure that you have a – do you have a break command with them?
Break command.
Like a release or a free?
Oh, yeah. We just say okay.
Perfect. So it's also important that when you're out and you're doing your heel and you're free or you're okay, that you're doing it in small increments and you do what I call a red light, green light, or a stop and go. So let's say you're out for a walk. Here's what I see often. You ask the dog to heel and the dog is in the heel position. However, they're very disengaged. So they're not paying attention to you. And that's a problem because they're basically kind of searching, right? They're called, it's like spotlight consciousness, which means they're with you, but they're not engaged with you, which means, you know, you could say stuff to the dog and they don't even hear you because they're basically scanning the area or sniffing the ground or whatever. So I like to do a lot of stop and goes and a lot of red light, green lights. So what I'll do is I'll go forward and I'll stop. And so let's say for an example, if you stop and Luca keeps going, that's a big problem because he's telling you right now he's not engaged with you. So if you do that, you have a very, very, very small chance of stopping him from becoming reactive because he's already completely disconnected from you. He might as well just be off leash. So when you're in environments where you're going to see people, see dogs, you want to audit and test your engagement by just stopping. If you slow, and a lot of times I'll shuffle my feet to give the dog a fair opportunity and I'll slow down. And if the dog stops and looks at me, I pay him. Yes. Boom. And I give him a piece of food and then I heel forward. And I'll do that often just to keep the dog engaged. Most people who go out with their dog who have a reactive dog don't have good engagement. So I always tell people it doesn't take much to soak a damp rag, which means the dog is already 80% there. All they need is a detonator or a trigger, like another dog or another person, to basically say, okay, F off, I'm gone. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think we definitely do this. I think being a little bit more intentional and prescribed about doing it, particularly at the beginning of a walk,
is
something we can work on. But yeah, I mean, we definitely are like practicing looks and rewarding looks, particularly at the beginning and then throughout the walk. I would say, like you talked about the shuffling the feet. Mm-hmm. When I do that, within one or two steps, he's stopped. I'll be a little bit more conscious of making sure that he's looking and checking in with me and not just stopping and waiting for the pressure on the collar to release to continue the walk.
But Good.
I think this is something that we can definitely focus on a little bit more.
Yep. And just that tune up, like you said, if you're engaging in the beginning, like when you go outside, let him do his thing, sniff, pee, poop, whatever, and then start to do your what I call a tune up. So you're just kind of bouncing back and forth and getting the dog to be engaged with you. And that's really, really helpful as well.
Yeah. Okay.
So timing on the correction, consider the remote collar as a management tool, and it just advances your obedience in general, and work on your tune-ups and your stop and goes. And then, you know, again, and I think you're pretty good at this already, but you know, just know that if you see another dog and you're out for a walk and everything's going good, you're not failing or doing anybody harm by just turn and burn and just be like, you know what? I don't feel like fighting my dog right now. Because, and again, my dog Burley has taught me so much as a trainer, and that's something I would always discourage my dog owners doing, because I just didn't know the guardian dogs like I know now, where I'm like, oh shit, like this is real. Like he goes 0 to 100 so quick, and I've been talking to some of my other friends in the dog training space, and they have more experience with the guardian dogs, and they're like, man, you could light them on fire and they're still going to go. Like training, obedience training goes out the window. They have this primal, like what they live for and what they are born for is this moment to what they think. Like that's what they think, you know. It's like, okay, I need to go smash this person and headbutt them. And it's like, man, like, and they really think that, you know, and it's like, you don't need to do that. Relax. So there is that, you know, there is just the reality of like, holy shit, like my dog is super trained, but you know, it's kind of an oxymoron, right? It's like my dog is super trained, but doesn't listen. And, it is, again, it's just like, okay, what kind of dog you have? So you have all the things going, you have all the ingredients in the pot for that to happen. You have an intact young teenager Cane Corso, and you know, it's nothing to be messed with. I mean, it's going to make you a better dog trainer and a better owner, and it's going to teach you a lot. I'd be curious, what does your breeder say? Does your breeder say similar to things that I'm saying, or do they feel like this is out of character for her genetics, or what is she?
She wasn't thrilled about the reactivity, and felt like this is something we need to control. I think she's a little bit surprised. Like, when we went over there for the first meet her pack and everything, I mean, we met all his siblings from prior litters and everything, and they were like exuberant and happy to meet us and very friendly. But she also does bite work competitions and all this stuff, so I mean, I think she does have a spectrum of personalities, and we could have a hyper guardian in the litter where another dog is way more chill.
Yep.
She's also, I mean, she's been honest. She's like, up until somewhere between 18 and 24 months, like, they're shits. Like,
yeah,
they are like this. And then, like, around two and a half, they become, like, just like, amazing partners. But she said, like, this is something that you need to nip in the bud. And I think that she's a passionate, responsible breeder and trainer to some degree, because she does all this bite work stuff. But mm-hmm. breeders have different opinions than trainers, and trainers have different opinions than veterinarians. And
I was just going to say, when I talk to some other Borble guys, they're like, man, I'd love to have that talk. And I'm like, son of a bitch.
And they she joked with us. She's like, don't make me think I gave you the wrong litter mate because I should have been using Luca for the bite work or something.
No, so yeah. Like, yeah.
I mean, like, again, we were not expecting a Labrador in this situation.
Right.
But the amount of, like, every walk having to be like, we're going on, you know, like a patrol in the jungle and like the enemy's about to pop out, is not a way to survive either. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough. I understand. I like probably understand more than anybody exactly what you're dealing with.
And that's why we were really happy to talk to you, because like we have a great trainer, but she's a great trainer at Labradoodles and, you know, the easy, dumb city breeds, offense.
No, yeah.
And like, this is just not her wheelhouse. And like, I don't think that all of those techniques are going to work here.
It's just different. It's different. You know, it's like bringing a Ferrari into the local Ford dealership. They're like, we don't even have the tools to take the tire off this thing. You know?
Yeah, I get it.
I get it. And it's good for you guys to kind of find that out. And a lot of dog owners understand that. And it's great, because sometimes dog owners, they hire this trainer who they love and are great. And you see all these, you know, doodles and shepherds doing really well. And then you give them a guardian dog and they're like, well... You're like, well, yeah. No, this just isn't your cup of tea. And you know, I've been doing an enormous amount of research on the breed even after the fact. And I've worked with Borbles before, and it just, you know, and I kind of, you know, bite my tongue a little bit, because I said, what's the most innately protective dog I've ever worked with as a dog trainer? And the Borble is definitely that. And, you know, now I made my bed and I got to, you know, figure it out. But it's... Yeah, it's frustrating and could be challenging, but okay. Anything else?
This is a very little thing. Just in general, like, for better or for worse, we've gone on Reddit, like the Cane Corso threads and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. The general wisdom with this class of dog is like, about an hour and a half, particularly for this age, like an hour and a half up, and then they need a nap because they're either getting shitty and overstimulated. And he really struggles with regulating himself. He will not take a nap out on his own. He'll maybe lay down for a little while and gnaw on a toy, but then it's in the crate for 2 hours so that he will sleep. And then, you know, we don't let him, he sleeps in his crate, he sleeps through the night, but we try to like let him like hang out on the bed for a little while just to cuddle. And lately he's been getting like very nippy in bed. He'll like want to like hold on to my arm with his mouth, or give some like love nips and play fight or something like that, which is not a behavior that's allowed. Mm-hmm. And is this just, you know, sort of like his age and telling us that he's overtired and cannot regulate and it's time to go to bed? Is this like something that you've experienced at all?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's just with most dogs, they get it again, man. It's just the same exact thing with kids. It's like, okay, time for bed, time for nap. You just tell, like, you do anything to them and they're just crying and flopping on the floor. And dogs are the same. Like, you go up and pet him and he's like, rawr, and he's grabbing you and you're like, dude, chill out. And yeah, they get overstimulated. They need naps. I mean, it's the crate.
We are nap enforcers, I assure you.
Yeah, good. Yeah, the nap is great. And it's important too, because to your point, they kind of get themselves into trouble. and they get frustrated and they kind of, their bandwidth just gets smaller. And they're, again, they're not Malinois. They're not shepherds. They're not that they can't, you know, keep up, but it's just, they're large breed. It's still a young dog too. I mean, these larger breeds, they take a long time to fully mature. And so absolutely, I would agree 100%.
Okay.
Yeah, 100%. I would agree to what's going on is that lashing out and that biting and gnawing and frustration and kind of fighting behavior is, it can mm-hmm. definitely be. And for me, that's why obedience is really important. I just go down, or I'll say crate, basically negative punishment. Yeah. I'll remove myself from the situation and
yep.
just kind okay. of walk away. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. This has been a very good call. I really appreciate it.